Welcome to another edition of the Big Pod Machine. It's been a couple of weeks. We've been pretty swamped with all-star happenings and some things involved in the trade deadline that's approaching. So not that we're making excuses. Actually, we were kind of lame. But we're back. We're back for a weekly run the rest of the way on this. And we're bearing down just like the Reds are. I'm Gordon Wittenmeyer with my partner, Pat the River Rat Brennan. And we'll get to how he earned that nickname soon. And our great producer, Phil Didion, behind the scenes. Pat, River Rat Man, you want to tell people why I call you that?
Well, you think I'm going in the Ohio River. And I still feel good about where we're at. For people that don't know or forgot, while we were on our personal extended all-star break, Gordon and I have a running bet going. He was down on the Reds' playoff chances months ago. Obviously, times have changed.
Times haven't changed that much. Did you see a Monday night against the freaking Nationals?
I did. But the long and the short of it is, our bet is that if the Nats make the playoffs, Gordon is proven wrong. He has to jump in the Ohio River as penance if the Reds miss the playoffs. I will be punished for my miscalculation, and I will go in the Ohio River, which is not a place you want to go. Gordon thinks and has thought all along
unless that I am a river rat.
Destined. Hence, I'm a river rat.
Yes.
Congratulations. Yes.
And I will enjoy that and I get still videotape feel good. Of that. And we'll invite all the major national media to record the event. It's going to be outstanding.
I think your jump in the river could actually draw a crowd. I think there are some people that would want to see that.
Maybe only if I take my shirt off.
Oh, God. No one wants that. You should never do that.
Maybe we should change the subject. Hey, you know what? It's July 22nd as we record this. That means we're less than 10 days from the biggest day on the calendar.
Yeah.
For determining the direction of the season for this club. And I'm not talking about Hunter Green's return. That's a whole different discussion. I'm talking about, obviously, the trade deadline. This ball club needs help, Pat.
Yeah, they do.
How much confidence do you have that they're going to go get the help they need?
I don't know. This, there seems to be a tendency to love, to hug and hold on to these prospects that the Reds have. And they're so deep with talent in the farm system right now. I don't know. It would be the reason I don't know, Gordon, is because it would seem, as much as I respect Brad Metter and Nick Kroll, and I do, a big splash, even a medium splash, would be quite a deviation from their recent history, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, last year, you know, they were going nowhere, and they claimed that they were more or less threading a needle. They weren't buying or selling, but they got rid of their opening day starter. You know, I believe did Frankie Montas start on the mound?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Because they pushed Hunter to a different day. I can't remember. Hunter wasn't hurt out of the chute last year, was he? Why didn't Hunter start? I thought Montas. I'm
Montas beat the Nats and
yeah,
Nick Martini.
Yeah, in the opener.
Yeah,
that's right. And Nick Martini had a big day. Yeah. So anyway. But that's who they traded, the veteran that they picked up in the offseason. And they, you know, they got Joey Weimer, whatever. I mean, he's gone now.
Yeah.
I don't even remember who else they got. And then they traded Lucas Sims. So they sold. They didn't sell big. It wasn't a fire sale, but they sure as hell didn't buy. And Jonathan India at the time didn't know whether he was coming or going. And once he wasn't traded, his comment was, I don't know what they were doing. I don't know if they were buying or selling. It was weird. So he's right. It was weird. The year before that, they had an opportunity in front of them. By the way, 100 games in, which is where we are right now, their record 2 years ago was better than it is right now. And they were, you know, I think they had already had, let's see, it's July 18th. Yeah, so they had a 12-game winning streak, which was their longest since the 1950s. And so they had reason to believe that with some of these, this infusion of youth that they brought up, including Andrew Abbott and Ellie De La Cruz and Matt McClain and so on and so forth, that they had a chance. They finished two games out, dude. They didn't add the starting pitcher. All they needed was a mediocre starting pitcher, a guy that could have given them five competitive starts. They win two games that they didn't otherwise win, and they're in the postseason that year. Yeah. By the way, the team they would have knocked out got to the World Series. This is how important this shit is.
I know. And look, I think what happened in 2023 was a mark against this Reds regime, and you know,
no question.
Look, Gordon, you've heard me say it a dozen times. Maybe people that are new to the pod here haven't, but I'm a big believer in just getting in. I think the third wild card spot was made, generally speaking. And it ebbs and flows, but generally speaking was made for teams like the Reds, and it incentivizes them to go out to the first 3 years of the expanded playoff. The third wild card in the NL has taken the pennant. I mean, if that's not, and those were not impressive teams. The Phillies in 22, I think they were 12 or 14 games over 500. And then,
yeah, but they had an impressive roster.
They did. That's fair enough. The Diamondbacks had a great roster too, but they were like six games over 500. And so were the Marlins, who were the number two.
And if I remember this right, they had about two starters who were going well going in.
Yeah. Yeah. So look,
and so,
I don't want to get tied up in who those teams were and you know what the constitution of the playoff mixed in those years, but this third wild card is always going to be hanging out there for teams like this year's Reds team. And there's when there is evidence, there are data points that suggest that tell you can go and make hay in the playoffs as the third wild card. It behooves you to just find a way to get in, even if it's the sixth seed overall.
Yeah, I'll tell you one other way it's made for a team like this. That first round, unless you get a bye, is going to be a three-game series. You got to win two games. So if you have starting pitching, those are the teams that go in and can be can actually have an advantage over the team that over 6 months had a better record because now you got to win two games and those starting pitchers become disproportionately critical. Yeah. And not only did a couple of Reds talk about that the other day after the Mets series, but the Mets manager said that he thinks that the Reds are the kind of team that can win in the postseason, can win playoff series because of their starting pitching.
And he would know. He would know.
So if we think that, if we're gonna take that as a fact base going into a discussion about the trade deadline, we know they're flawed in other areas. What's going to put them over the top, Pat? What do they absolutely need to go get? Go ahead.
You're set with starting pitching, obviously. Where this team needs to look is in the corner outfield spots and the bullpen. I'm suggesting the names I'm going to mention here would suggest bold, bold, bold movement. But you know what? You can get some of your offseason work done too if you're picking up guys who are controllable, who aren't rental players. And that's the direction I think the Reds, you know, they need a bat. Defensively, right field has been hit or miss for this team. Now, you know, Noelvi Marte they're giving him a shot in right field for several reasons. But
That's fascinating, by the way. We need to talk about that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that was, I think, done with offense more in mind than anything. Would you agree with that?
No.
Oh.
I think it's multiple layers.
Okay.
I think if it was only an offensive move, they've got other choices. But for instance, Lux isn't a defensive answer really anywhere, but he's a matchup bat that you like to have. So you're not just going to stick him anywhere. They did this with Noelvi because they don't have like a great defender in the corners out there, and they're not getting enough production. But when they face a left-hander, yes, there's an offensive element to this big time. Matchups for left-handers, yes. But it doesn't do you any good to get an advantage offensively if you're going to disadvantage yourself at a couple of positions defensively when you already don't have a good fielding team. So they think that Noelvi Marte can be as good defensively in right field as he is at third base, and he's had issues at third base. They also know that Santiago Espinal is their best defensive third baseman and one of the right-handed bats they want to get in the lineup when they face a lefty. So you can put your best defender at third base and still get that other good right-handed bat. Noelvi's been one of the best right-handed bats they've had this year. You can still get him in the lineup and maybe get just as good a defense out of some place you haven't necessarily got good defense.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing about it. This is potentially a long-term move.
Yes.
A lot has to happen, but they believe so much. I mean, this kind of reminds me of those old movies, those old black and white movies about baseball when, you know, some part-time bird dog scout would be out in a field somewhere and he'd see some kid throw a rock and he'd say, "Oh, look at that arm." And then he'd bring the kid in for a tryout. Next thing you know, it's Walter Johnson or something. This was kind of discovering something. This was kind of like this hidden talent, I guess. Noelvi Marte never started a game in pro ball in the outfield until that game in New York, that last game in New York. Because he went out to the outfield and was shagging throughout the year. He goes out there and gets some work in. He's shagging during batting practice. The outfield coach, Colin Cowgill, saw it. Freddie Benavides, bench coach, saw it. These guys are saying, "Yeah, he looks pretty good out there." Cowgill said he's got all the right footwork and he's got all the right instincts.
Yeah.
And he's tracking balls like an experienced outfielder. So they start talking about it. And then it was only just a couple of days before he actually did it that they said, "Well, let's try him out there. Let's work him out there." And then Cowgill goes into Terry Francona and says, "He's ready." So they put him out there. So if he takes to it, and who knows if that happens, right? It's probably going to look ugly before it looks great at times, just because he doesn't have the experience. But if he takes to it, you solve a lot of problems. And by the way, guess who's coming in the system? Maybe next.
Sal Stewart.
Third base? Sal Stewart.
Yeah.
If Sal Stewart's the real deal, he ain't playing the middle infield.
Yeah.
He can play some third base. And now you've maybe helped your outfield and long-term found a place for Sal Stewart to play. So all these things come into play and how they work, how it eventually shakes out. It's going to be fun to watch.
When you lay it out like that, it makes it sound like they absolutely will not go for a corner outfielder.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. If that's available. See, I think that my take on it, talking to people, is that they're going to look for a bat that can help. They don't want to create another deficit with the glove. And so because of some of the versatility they have, and now Noelvi Marte is part of that versatility, Spencer Steer is part of that versatility, Lux to some degree is part of that versatility. So because of some of that they have, and certainly Espinal, they can look at any number of positions. I don't think that they're saying we need an outfielder, we need a third baseman. I think they're saying we need a bat that can help us. Who's available that we think we're willing to give up the right players for, and where does that guy play?
Yeah. Well,
can we make that work?
Let me just give you a name here real quick, because everyone is talking about Stephen Kwan, Jaren Duran. I like Taylor Ward from the Los Angeles Angels. That's a name. For me, that's like a second tier compared to like a Kwan. And I think that would be attainable. I think that would fit.
I'm going to look up just some basic defensive stuff here. So what do we got here? Negative defensive war every season.
Okay.
I didn't know that.
Well, now everyone knows that. And everyone knows my player is out.
But he's got the versatility. And he certainly got a bat.
Making me look bad, Gordon. Hey.
Well, he's already got 23 home runs. I mean, there might be some people that like him or figure out that there's the best way to use him. That's not a bad call.
How do you see this shaking out, Gordon? And I first want to know from you, do you think they make a move, period? And then what direction would you expect them to go in?
They got
to
make a move. If they didn't learn enough from 2023, what making a move can do for a team, they got Sam Moll, but they didn't do enough. And if they haven't learned yet just what it does for a clubhouse, I mean, certainly Terry Francona would be in their ear on that.
Yeah.
You have to do something for those guys in the clubhouse that have busted their asses and honestly have bought in to everything Terry Francona and his staff has brought to the table with these guys. They bought into everything. They're actually better at some of the garbage that showed up on the field last year in terms of making outs on the bases and mistakes in the field. They're still not a great fielding team. You can argue they're not a good fielding team, but they're not making the same mental mistakes that they do.
Yeah.
And when they do make a mistake, you generally don't see it repeated, and you still got the same high level of effort. So that team has put itself in position. They've maximized most of their abilities. So now it's up to the front office. This one time a year when the front office can make a statement and do something and have an impact on the field the same way the players do, players notice. I'm here to tell you, after as many years as I've done this and as many clubhouses as I've been in, players notice at the deadline what your front office did.
Yeah.
And it does matter. It can look at the Brewers traded off guys. They traded Hader a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
When they were in it, and it demoralized those guys. Hey, those guys were pissed. I talked to some of those guys a year after. And then that's when they were willing to be more candid about it. So it matters. They better do it. So that said, I think they will. And to your point about adding the bat, I mean, you focused on bats. I don't give a rat's ass about the bats, honestly. I don't know that they can go deep enough in that pool. If they add around the edges and get somebody with a decent glove who can match up somewhere, I think that helps. But they got to add bullpen help. You win in the playoffs these. I know we talked about starting pitching, and you can steal games with good starting pitching. And you have to have, you know, if you have a couple of frontline guys, you can win short series. You can take leads late in the game. But the Dodgers basically bullpened their way to a championship last year. Now, they have all the resources in the world to stockpile all these effing pitchers. So they're kind of a unicorn that way with their roster. But it does show you that with every year that passes, we see more and more innings in the postseason, it seems, covered by relievers. You manage differently. You manage differently down the stretch to get there. And you're going to need more bullets in that bullpen. Good ones. You're going to need playoff caliber guys.
Yeah.
You have a few of them. You have a few of them now. You need another lefty. You need some some power out there. You need to get a substantial relief upgrade and maybe two guys. That's the way I see it. And if you can add a bat, cool. But I wrote about this after they lost that series opener to the Nationals in Washington. That's a sub. It's a below average lineup. They have the worst bullpen in baseball, so they're not going to hold a lead late. And they got in that bullpen in the fourth inning, I think it was.
Yeah, and they made
got
it
down 5-0 real quick. And yeah. Francona admitted, the only reason I went out there and got Brady Singer right then, I didn't want to that early with one out in the second, was because I thought we might have a chance to still win that game.
They have shown an aptitude for digging out of these deep early holes, haven't they?
But specifically, this is a team playing for nothing in July with a below average lineup and a horseshit bullpen that they're facing. They can hit that bullpen. They can score late runs. So when it's 5-0 in the second inning, and you're coming off a 4-day break, they've only played 3 games since, and you got an average of 6 innings out of your starters in those 3 games. Yeah. Not one of those games was a particularly short start. The shortest start was 5 innings. So you've got guys that can give you some innings and that aren't overtaxed. Here's a game that you got a chance to win against a shit team. And right now you're hanging right there, 2.5, 1.5, games separating you from a playoff spot. You got to win the series and you'd like to sweep it. But anyhow, the point is that's not even close to what you're going to face down the stretch in September against some of these better teams you're facing that are fighting for the same spot in the playoffs you are.
Yeah.
Never mind October.
Yeah.
And if your bullpen can't hold, now if one of those guys gives up a couple of runs along the way, you get it. But out of the chute, Lyon Richardson immediately gives up the inherited runners and gives up one of his own. They didn't have one, two, three inning. Rest of the game.
No.
Suter battled his ass off, and he's the guy that should have been most tired. He got 4 outs the day before, and he didn't give up a run, but he had traffic, and he had an issue with the umpire.
Yeah. The strike zone was inconsistent.
Yeah, and so, but you can't, I mean, again, this isn't a good team. There's only so much of that you can blame on the umpire.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's fair.
To me, this told me that, hey, 10 days at that point, 10 days to go to the trade deadline. Here is a bright red neon sign indicating what they need.
Yeah. Yep. Things stand today, Gordon. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, especially a lefty, but I'll take anybody that can get high leverage outs against good teams.
Well, as things stand today, July 22nd, the Reds are 3.5 back, Gordon. 3 games over 500. They took care of business against a great home team in the New York Mets over the weekend. They're going to need
swept.
To.
They came really close.
They really should have. Yes, I said that to someone. They should have swept the series.
Should have. I don't know. But Could have.
Absolutely.
My God, they scored that run in the 8th to tie it. And I thought, God damn, they're going to do it.
Yeah, right. Well, we're about done for this episode.
Yeah. We didn't really solve the problems, but maybe Nick Kroll and Brad Meter can.
Well, they're smarter than me. I know that much, so.
No, we know you're all smarter than me, so. But we can. We got one more. I think we got one more podcast before the deadline. So maybe we'll have something of real substance to talk about at that point.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll have done something at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, River Rat. That's a wrap for this week's edition of the Big Pod Machine, All Things Cincinnati Reds, the greatest baseball podcast in the history of the civilized world.
Yeah, that's right.
So for Phil Didion and River Rat Brennan, I'm Gordon Whitmire, and we'll see you the week of the deadline with hopefully some serious stuff to talk about and a playoff group. Until then, take care.